folks, welcome to Spoiler in Time. This is a Cord Killers family show. That doesn't mean it's family friendly, although it kind of is. What it means is that on Cord Killers, we talk about all the gear and services and things to be able to watch the stuff you want. And we talk about what stuff's coming up. Then we watch it and we come over here to Spoiler in Time and we talk about the shows we watched. On today's show, we will be reviewing Objects in Space, the last episode in the Firefly series. We'll also talk about episode 5 of season 3 of Mr. Robot. We'll get a rant about the movie Happy Death Day from Bryce. But I'm Tom Merritt, and the guy who's always with me is Brian Brushwood.
Heck yeah, but more importantly, we're here for one thing, the thing everybody wants to know. How are we doing in the winter movie draft?
Answer, not great.
Not good. We're number two. We're number two. First of all, Brian, Murder on the Orient Express pulled in $28.2 million.
It's actually not a bad
which
opening.
Which is actually more than I expected, I'll be honest. Daddy's Home 2 pulled in $30 million, which is less than I expected when we bid 16 on it, but more than I expected after the horrible reviews it got.
Yeah. Man, I saw the promotions engine of that on Nickelodeon. It was a little bit weird flipping through channels and while my kids are watching TV. I'm like, is that Mel Gibson? And I'm like, is Mel Gibson in this movie? And then so that was an eye-opener.
Yeah, so Thor Ragnarok, honestly, only at $211 million. And I say that not because I'm being funny, but because I would think Thor Ragnarok would be closer to $300 million at this point because of how well it's been received and it's a big blockbuster.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man, like that tale is depressingly accurate. How it does in those first 3 or 4 days really is a good predictor of how the rest of it goes. And we see that on everything. We see that on new episodes of The Modern Rogue. We see that on sales of new products over at scamstuff.com. Like, I understand now much more than I did 5 years ago why the first 3 days matter, because that is your first widespread testing of what the mass culture is going to think of your product.
Now, Brian and I are not always on the same team. And because of that, we have let oft times guests Christy Cates and Nalongo represent Team Cord Killers, which they are doing this year. And they are in first with $243 million based on the strength of Thor Ragnarok. They have Wonder coming out this weekend. Team Big and Tall, however, has Justice League. Team Big and Tall might not catch Cord Killers with Justice League.
Yeah, I actually don't think they will, and they certainly won't have first place once The Greatest Showman gives them an extra bump. But all of this is moot, because let's say Wonder and The Greatest Showman do $150 million together, which is insane to postulate, but possible. That still leaves Cord Killers under $400 million total, which means for Frog Pants not to walk away with this, that means this has to that means the new Star Wars movie has to do less than $500 million domestic, which I'm just not seeing.
Star Wars: The Last Jedi is going to bring in 85% in points. That's what they bid. They said, we'll take Star Wars: The Last Jedi, but we'll only take 85% of the gross. So that's why it has to do less than $500 million, because they only get 85% of whatever it does. And honestly, that's enough. I mean, I'm not one to call it over before it's over, but
Yeah, on top of that, I'm going to bet that we're going to have our first, like, 75-way tie for first place in the Chat Realm League.
From everybody who just took Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yeah, what an interesting year this is going to be.
Yeah, it is really strange to see all these low numbers, to only see one triple-digit movie. Kingsman, only, you know, it's $99.4 million. It's not going to get to $100 million. And that's the closest
one. Holy cow, you're right.
Aside from Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok is the only blockbuster we've seen this entire season long.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kind of crazy. All right. Let's move on to talking about Happy Death Day. This is a movie that I don't worry about being spoiled on myself. Brian doesn't either. Bryce, you saw it and you had very strong feelings.
I went and saw this last night on with the MoviePass thing. And you guys are the conceit of Happy Death Day.
No, but you described it as like a horror version of or a mystery of Groundhog Day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's about a sorority girl who wakes up in a guy's dorm room, and she goes about her day and gets murdered at the end of the day, but wakes up.
Yeah, like you do.
Yeah, but she wakes up back in that dorm room, and she finds out that when she dies, she starts the day over and has to sort of solve her own murder.
So it's Groundhog Day with dying.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Well, that seems like that would be really good, and that there's no way they could screw that up.
The concept, has so much potential. So there are a lot of not great things about Happy Death Day. Not the least of which is that... So it's a mystery, right? At the end of the day, it's a mystery movie, right? It's about
who killed her.
Who killed me, right? And so she has this plan of like, okay, well, I'm just going to go look at... And the whole idea is like she's like a nasty sorority girl, so a lot of people don't like her. And so her initial plan is like, okay, well, talking with the guy in the dorm room is like, oh, well, why don't you just go and see and look at all the people because you have unlimited lives. And then she starts to do that, and...
It turns out they all killed her. No. It was a team effort.
So she does it for a while until she realizes, oh, this is actually like really messing with her body. And because one day she wakes up and she just like faints because of, turns out, being exploded and being stabbed a bunch of times.
A little taxing
on the body.
Yeah.
And
she feels different ways.
Effects of her murders, even though she wakes back up.
Yeah. Yeah. She does die different ways, right? Like the first time she dies, she's like stabbed in this walking tunnel in a park, but she's also like gets blown up in a police car and gets stabbed in a hospital. Or no, I think she's shot in a hospital. And so the movie almost does something really, really cool, right? Because at some point she's sitting in this diner with the boy and she's like, man, I thought I really solved it. And then the TV goes up and you hear the TV in the mix of the audio, so you know it's an important thing. And it's like, the serial murderer on campus is in hospital and he's under protective watch because he's a murderer. And she's like, that's it.
She's like, that's horrible reporting.
But she goes, that's the guy. That's the guy who's killing me. Because he's killing all these co-eds, and they're all blonde, and so...
She didn't think of the serial murderer before that. Okay.
Well, apparently they didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So this is a new development in this version of the day.
Right. And so what she does is she goes to the hospital to confront him, because she had been there earlier.
That can't go wrong.
She saw that there was a police officer outside, and she saw that the police officer leaves at one point in the evening, so she goes, hey, he's gonna escape. What she does is she goes and steals the officer's gun, points it at him, and says, he's going to escape. Go get help.
What?
Yes.
What?
It's this one.
I have no words either.
He goes and does it. He runs away and not like gets on the walkie-talkie and says, hey, get another cop down here. I'm a cop. We have this communication channel. She goes into the room where she's pretty sure he escaped somehow to confront him. And guess what? He escaped.
Yeah.
And so they have this fight and she ends up,
Now, at this point, is there any, like, did an angel show up? You'd be like, by the way, this is your last life. You better make it count. If you die this time, you definitely can't just go straight to the guy.
Well, she's figured out, oh, this is it. So I'm going to spend the rest of my day being nice. Also, the whole character development is like, oh, I'm a real A-word. A
real piece of work.
I'm really not cool. So I'm going to go and be nice. And I'm going to see my dad on my birthday. And we're going to this, that, and the other thing. And so she does it, and the guy dies, and you're like, okay. And she and the boy from the dorm room are sharing this cupcake because it's her birthday. Also, it's her birthday. and it's this really nice thing, and it's a fate, and there's a fade to black. And I'm just sitting there like,
that's really how the movie ends.
So the idea being that because she had a change of heart, she didn't get murdered.
Right. Well, but then... But I'm thinking, well, that's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't explain how this murderer escaped from a hospital.
Sure.
And killed her in a walking path, in a frat house.
That's not the message of the movie, Bryce. The message is be nice to people.
Well, you would think it is, but that's also not the end of the movie.
Oh.
Because she wakes up and she's like, what the hell? I thought I got the guy. But it's not. That's not.
And wait, what?
And this could be a really...
I was ready for a bad ending. I was not ready for that.
Well, and this could be a really great moment of like, oh yeah, none of that stuff makes any sense. That's a huge plot. There are huge plot holes. This is it would be a classic mystery misdirection.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And it turns out that it's her roommate in the sorority. And the only reason that the roommate is doing it is because she... the main character, Tree...
In the sorority was killing her.
Was killing her, right.
Okay, not the serial killer. Okay.
The roommate in the sorority house is like, oh, she's like the plain one of the sorority. Mm-hmm. She doesn't wear makeup. She wears her hospital scrubs because she's training to be a doctor or something. And
training to be a murderer.
Apparently. So the only reason she's doing this is because... Tree, the main character, is going out with this doctor professor. Okay. And the roommate is just jealous. It's all just, I'm jealous you got him and he never looks at me. And even Tree goes, that's why I've been dying?
That's actually pretty good.
But the way it plays out and the way it's set up, it's like, that's... The way I phrased it on Twitter was like, if you did something stupid and you said, didn't I just do something really stupid? You're still doing something really stupid. Like,
yeah, but I do give a lot of forgiveness in a show if they point out it just in advertising, they call it address and dismiss. You know, it's just like, you know, Dollar Shave Club, you know, can they possibly good? No, they're effing great. You know, like that's I'm okay with that.
I think. I'm probably selling it better than the movie does, is my problem with it. It's like, it doesn't do a great job of executing all the Groundhog's Day elements.
Is that the end when she wakes up and goes, that's why you've been killing me?
Well, they have a fight, and then she kicks her out of the second story of the sorority house
like
an action hero.
Yeah.
The way she killed her on that last day was that the cupcake was poisoned.
Oh.
And so they had it at the end of the night, and then she died in her sleep.
Okay, how well prepared is this psycho?
Yeah, seriously.
Like, she's got bombs and poisons.
I can't blow her up
knives.
Today. I guess I'll have to rely on the poison cupcake, which is the 17th way I plan to murder her today.
And, like, her whole idea was like, well, I'm going to drug the murderer in the hospital, and I'm going to let him escape because I have access because I'm a nurse, and they'll believe it was him and not me.
Got it.
It's just... between like the very
okay, so who gets kicked out the window at the end, Tree or the
murderer?
The murderer, chick.
Oh, and then that ends the cycle.
And that ends it, and she falls in love with the dorm room guy, even though he's like, cool.
I don't know, poison cupcakes.
And just between like very weird plot stuff and like It has subtext. It's got a lot of like visual subtext, but without any of the subtlety, right? So at the end of the movie, it's like the boyfriend like fakes her waking up in and makes it seem like, oh, it's her living that day again because he changes her ringtone and he changes her clothes and stuff. And she's like, oh, you bib. And as they're like making out at the end, a poster for the movie They Live is on the wall right back behind them, framed up perfectly on the side.
Well, wait,
like there are lots of like little like signage things like that. Like,
sure. But They Live. I'm trying to see any tie into They Live on that.
The two of them have lived. They continue to live their life.
Oh, geez. Wow.
She walks into a frat boy's room and the wall like on the wall. There's like a do not enter sign.
Got
and
it.
A danger ahead right. sign. It's just that could be a really good movie with like a little more love.
Yeah.
I like this new segment on Spoiler in Time called. You spoil something in a way that's more enjoyable than having gone seen it.
So anyway, that's Happy Death Day.
Happy Death Day.
Probably
all right.
Pass on it.
Fantastic. Well, let's move on to Mr. Robot, which accelerated the plan. Stage 2 began. And we had the illusion of a single shot episode. It was shown without commercial interruption, and there were cuts, but it was this sort of, you know, one person perspective, starting with Elliot and then switching to protesters and then switching to Angela. I enjoyed the way it was told personally. I liked that we finally got movement in the story somewhat, in the world's story, not in Elliot's story.
Did we though?
We got movement in the world story, which was phase two began, right? Well, they went in and trashed E-Corp and
sure,
and but something finally happened is what I'm trying to say.
That's the whole thing is Elliot was trying to stop it and they were like, no, you absolutely must do it on Monday. And then they start it. And then 3/4 of the way through, they're like, Angela, code word psych. We need you to get Elliot to stop this.
They needed him to get the backup.
But
some files.
The way I and I might have been dialed out there, but Elliot's whole plan was to get to the MCU or whatever it is the MHP or
backup.
His plan was to get there to scrub the bad code and keep it from blowing up the building, and then. They said, well, go get Elliot so he can scrub the code and keep the building from blowing up.
Because they believed he was still under Angela's control.
Well, but it doesn't matter.
Mr. Robot was the one who wanted to keep blowing up the building. White Rose wants to keep blowing up the building. Irving didn't want to blow up the building. It was very confusing. I'm not sure why.
Exactly. It was like the whole thing got started, and then keep in mind they've been building this up week over week. Like they got in a fight where it's just like, hey man, Tyrell, how much resource? You know, what do you need? He's like, I need the whole Dark Army if you want it on Monday. It's like, well, it's got to be on Monday. And then they do it and they start it, and then he immediately turns around and is just like, no, go get Elliot to stop this from blowing up. And then Angela doesn't even do that. I guess she hunts for the rubber ducky, which is a magic key that gives her hack access, and then she scrubs it. And then he's like, hey, you know, that's real complicated and we need a thorough job done. And she's like, yeah, I did it. Which all of this, our pet theory, I forgive all of this once we go to multiple worlds, because now I'm so. Here's how convinced I am. I think White Rose. I want to try and emphasize the idea that White Rose and her male alter ego are possibly two different people from different realities, swapping.
So Elliot's met the female version. Dom has met the male version. Dom has met Darlene, the same Darlene who knows the Elliot who saw the female version.
Right. So I'm employing the possibility that the story we've seen has not all been in the same world. Right. I'm also holding on to the prospect that maybe, you know, there's clearly this is not the same Angela that we've seen before. We're now at the point where she's demonstrating skills that Angela just didn't have, and knowledge that she just didn't have. And whether it's mind swapping and bodies in different realities or whatever, I adored that little note where he turns to his cubicle mate and then just rails on him. And then guy's like, whoa, that was uncalled for. And then he's like, oh wait, I meant to say that to you. And the fact that we're now involved in this story, I don't know.
I feel like we're getting something wrong. And this is a problem with the show still that I don't know this. I feel like we're getting something wrong about what they wanted Angela to do and what Elliot wanted to do. And there's blowing up the building. There's evacuating the building. And I think Irving was trying to get the building evacuated, not necessarily stop it from blowing up.
Yeah.
But I know that was Angela's big thing is I need that building evacuated because she doesn't want to kill anybody.
Angela was willing to blow. Elliot didn't want it to blow up at all. Angela was fine with it blowing up as long as the people got out.
Right.
But also, I had the impression that it's not the same building they're in, right?
No, it's not.
Right. It's another building where the records are stored.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't want to, it's lazy to just say, oh, well, that's confusing storytelling. But I do feel like I probably could have used a little more handholding on at this level of depth than I got on this episode.
Yeah, because there's also what Elliot was trying to do is stop the shipments from being consolidated.
Right.
And so they had discovered that and got the shipments to start. But I don't see how that could have changed in a day, certainly.
Yeah, that was confusing, especially at the beginning where he's trying to figure out, like, he's realizing he lost days, and the higher up is talking to him in the hallway, and she's like, oh yeah, we approved your plan. And that was a little confusing, whether it was his initial plan to have the remote sites scan stuff to kind of take some of the wind out of the sails, or if it was if something Mr. Robot did over these days that he was missing to undo all of that.
Right. I mean, regardless of the specifics, I will say that we've reached a level of intricacy and confusion that is distracting to me. I almost think I would have enjoyed this episode better had I not known a single damn thing about any of it. Like, yeah. I could grok the idea of, like, guy's in trouble. Guy's going floor to floor, dodging. This is all a one-camera thing. Oh, girl trying to accomplish thing. She put the thingy in the doobie-doo. And then, she wore a mace mask in order to get past people. How clever. Like, those are all good beats, and they were all told well. My favorite moment was subverting expectations with the glue-sniffing old chick in the back and finding out that she's super wise to all the security protocols, but then throws the young white kid next to her under the bus.
I agree with you. The majority problems for me at this episode are how did we get here and where are we going, not what happened.
Correct.
What happened, and this is why I said we finally had something happen. We were no longer treading water. We were no longer yak yak conversation. It was action. And I did like that, and I liked the way it was told.
Yeah, I also like the fact that they were even telling some of the global beats by virtue of that CNN screen in the elevator.
The annexation.
The
annexation of the Congo by China, yeah.
Which still hasn't been explained why China wants that.
I think they've established that China is opportunistic and expansionist. And
there's definitely a real interest in Africa by China because they see it as a place where they can make inroads in markets that are not dominated by the U.S. and Europe already. And so to me, I read it as sort of an extreme version of that, where China could say, while the U.S. is distracted with all of this stuff, we can move in and actually take over one of the poorer markets and capture it directly.
Oh, okay.
Well, regardless, I like the fact that they're moving, and I've learned to deal with confusion with Mr. Robot and know that it will eventually be spelled out for me sufficiently. And while the motivations were a bit confusing for me at the end, and I understand it's, you know, purely my fault for not keeping up with the juggling act of all the ideas, I definitely left it like, that was cool. Not entirely sure what happened, though.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure where we're going next either. But I did enjoy the episode, just purely, if nothing else, from a cinematic
Oh no, it was beautiful. It was beautiful, and the pacing was great. The storytelling was good. And they did a bunch of novel twists.
They did some really good stuff with that technical feat of doing that in one continuous visual. Like, it's clearly not one shot. Like, that's the very first thing that they said on that Verge after show is like, no, of course it wasn't all one take.
Right.
That would be impossible.
Right.
But like, there are a lot of very technical things, and there are clearly places where it can be cut. But doing things like, you know, that CNN segment, you know, just running right into it and then doing that news package really still and then moving back into the crowd. Like, I think there was just a really impressive eye for detail. There's that one scene very early on where Elliot is going off into this front hallway by the elevator, and he's going through the, you know, it's got those glass doors and they've got the little E-Corp logo etched onto it. And the camera just glides through through that glass ceiling, past the etching.
Yeah.
And either that's like really good digital compositing or some weird like craft trick, but like really, really well.
No, there's all the times I caught the transition, I thought that was a clever way to transition. Yeah. I mean, it was smart.
No,
all
that
the way
shot, that shot Bryce is talking about, I actually turned to Eileen and I was like, how'd they do that shot? Yeah. She's like, it's CGI. She's like, but it's really good CGI.
Right, because
like,
it's hard to track that, because if it's glass, it's transparent. So it's not the easiest thing to track. It's really an accomplishment.
All right, let us finish Firefly. Now, we'll be doing the movie Serenity to really finish the entire story next week. But this is the last of the television episodes, Objects in Space, featuring Jubal Early, or as I call him, First Draft the Operative.
Yes, I thought the exact same thing. This is the first time I've seen this episode since watching the movie Serenity 10 plus years ago. Not only, and what a different take from the operative as well. The operative is, you know, he sees five chess moves ahead, but he's at least sane. I loved the clearly not all put together moment. Like that moment when he says, so you're a bounty hunter. And he says, oh no, it's not like that at all. And he turns and goes, I'm a bounty hunter. And it's like, what? He's not entirely here. Also, there's kind of a devil may care, who cares, I don't know the order in which this was shot and where they thought they were, but for what's ostensibly a primetime science fiction family television show on Fox, that was a terrifyingly explicit confrontation between Kaylee and Early.
It's all by implication, right?
But dark.
But
super dark implications. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like I just got goosebumps remembering that moment. And like when she starts weeping, I believed it. And I was right there terrified with her.
Well, because they have built you up in only 12 episodes or 13 episodes to know that Kaylee is sweet and kind and would hurt no one. And of anyone, not that anyone on the ship deserves that, but of anyone, she is the last one who deserves it, which is Joss Whedon's brilliance in having Jubal Early threaten her with that and only her with that. It establishes early that this man has no moral center. He's amoral. He merely wants to get Summer so that he can get the reward, but it's way more twisted than just I'll stop at nothing to get her. I don't care. I want to minimize. I'm practical enough to minimize the trouble I have to go to, but I won't pull back because I think something's wrong.
Yeah. What did you think of the feint they pulled where it's a 1-2 punch? They flatly say, look, we've hinted at it all season long. Can we all talk about it? She's might be psychic, let's put that on the table. And then once you've cracked open that door flatly and objectively, I mean, how much weirder is the idea of her uploading her consciousness into Serenity, so that fake out that they do. Now we have the benefit of knowing ultimately the real truth and what is and is not on the table. But I was preoccupied with that side of it the first time I watched it. This time it was all about the villain. What did you think of how they handled that?
I remember the first time I saw this being sure, I'm like, she's not in the ship. Where is she? Is she really in the ship? She's somehow getting the ship. Like, because she's exactly what you said. They gave her just enough vague, strange powers that the Alliance gave her. That I'm like, I don't know, maybe she can control the ship. Maybe she's doing that. It definitely doesn't matter now, but it still plays well to me as convincing that she could throw Jubal off, that he would be in that same state of not wanting to believe, but not being certain that maybe there is something going on. Where is she? How does she know these things? And they did, the other thing that they did was they set the table of her being able to look at someone and see the secret, right?
Yeah.
In fact, to the point that Simon actually says the line that she hears him say, like his real line. He actually says that later on in the show. And I think he's the only one that actually gets mirrored that way. I also thought it was, in that respect, I thought it was significant that Kaylee is the only one that she doesn't actually see turn to her and say a secret thing.
Well,
because
I don't think
Kaylee, I think, is who she is. Everything. Well, I think that's meant to say, like, you get what you see with Kaylee.
What I thought was interesting is the only thing, and I wonder if this is a limitation of her gift, which, I don't know if we'll ever find out, but she only sees the negatives in everyone. Like, she only sees the dark stuff that people are trying to keep hidden.
Mm-hmm.
Things. And in the case of Shepherd Book, it's a, it wouldn't be polite for me to say.
Yeah.
Whereas, whereas with Adam Baldwin's, what's his name?
Jane.
Jane. Yeah, with Jane, it's his one secret that he just can't stop repeating. The money was too good. The money was too good. You know, it's like, push it down, push it down. Don't let him know. Like, yeah. It's, and I wonder if that's part of why, oh my God, that transition where she's so confused and she reaches over and picks up the twig and it's an autumn day and it just snaps to everyone freaking out around her. They did a really good job of taking us along the ride of what her subjective experience is like.
I also, there's another little tiny hint that I'm so sad that we'll never get to see on screen, although it is touched on in a series of comics. Where you see the shepherd's internal monologue and you're like, whoa, he's such a nice guy. Where's all this hate coming from? And then you see Jubal at some time. They say like, why'd you knock out the shepherd? And he says, that's no shepherd.
Well, and what I liked about that when I saw it to begin with is like, oh my gosh, maybe he's got a more interesting history. But now, again, being focused on the villain the entire time, I definitely was like, man, I don't trust anything he says. is that the episode?
Read
that they...
the Shepherd's Tale.
Right on.
And you could actually find out what all of that is alluding to. It's really good.
Awesome. I could not be more excited to watch Serenity. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, same here. I have to say, as many times as I've watched these over and over, it was really fun to sit down and watch them week to week like this. Because I don't think I ever experienced it that way because they didn't show them all week to week, you know, the first run. And I never got to just watch them in the correct order and have a week between to process them. That was really enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how many details really pop up that we didn't recognize before. Now, we're going to watch Serenity, and we talked about this on the main show, but after that, it's going to be Deadwood, right?
Yeah, so Serenity next week, and then the week after that, we will start the runner-up of our tournament, Deadwood, because we missed Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, but not what's the town he's from? Not
Harlan.
Harlan,
County.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
We want to put him in a different place. So thanks everybody for watching. Thanks everybody for spoilering. Don't forget, if you enjoy getting these early, and you're like, wait a minute, I don't get them early. You can get them early. Support us on Patreon, patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll spoil you next time.
Bye.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.